The UCLA Bruins are NCAA national champions for the first time in program history. And on today's episode of Hoops 360, we break down how they got it done over the Gamecocks. Plus, what did the Gino Auriemma and Dawn Staley altercation mean to us? We break down WNBA draft stock and so much more on today's edition of Hoops 360. Welcome into Hoops 360. She is Ice Young. I am Caroline Fenton, and Ice, for the first time ever, UCLA is a national champion, and they did it in an awfully dramatic fashion, taking down South Carolina 79-51, and even that is a massive point differential, and it still didn't even feel that close. We're going to get into every single angle from this game and from the Final Four, but your initial reactions to what we just saw, UCLA now national champions.
Oh my goodness. You know, honored to witness history. Like anytime we see someone do something for the first time, you really can appreciate the process and the journey. And congratulations to head coach Corey Close. I really want to acknowledge her first because I've had the chance over the last few years to cover her closely, to cover her teams. I did the Big Ten tournament in which they blasted Iowa, which should have been a sign that they were going to run through whoever they were going to see next for the next six games. But my goodness, like she has a winning formula. We talk about retention in this day and age and getting players to stay. And I believe that the reason why this team won a championship is because of retention. Because there was a group last year that went to the Final Four, that experienced heartbreak, and that decided to stay together and do it again. And then they added on a couple of extra weapons. And man, this team was just the most high-powered, disciplined offense, stingy defense that we saw in this tournament. They play a beautiful style of basketball. I said this on the air, but it reminds me of watching the Spurs when Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker and Tim Duncan were playing, like, and everything just click, 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 beautiful swish shots. Everything looked great. Completely took South Carolina out of their game plan and what they wanted to do. And they were in control from start to finish. But I think Coach Corey Close, has really cemented herself in history because she's been close and she's had good teams, but this was the team that was perfect to win a national championship, that had the roster, that had the tools, Caroline, and to see it all come together, to see the joy that this team has experienced throughout the season as well, it just was honestly beautiful to witness. So I'm so happy for them. I feel like, you know, we don't get to control how the story goes, but you can appreciate the story. And I think this is a really great story that I am looking forward to continuing to follow down the line. Those six seniors or grad students for UCLA, what a group. You know, what a story they are going to be able to tell their children one day about the bond that was created and the heartbreak they experienced to come back the next year to stay together and to win. The fact that Sienna and Lauren got to win a national championship together,
yeah.
I literally think I got teary-eyed seeing the clip of them hugging and Lauren looking at her like, just what an awesome moment, you know? And it just felt like a team that has all the right things. I think I agree with Dawn Staley when she said they have a good coach that's a good human being and they're good people. And being around this program, that's what they come across. And so I'm over the moon happy for Corey Close and that squad. And for the story that we got. It also, I'll say last thing, is like it really helps our game that a new team won a national championship. You know, that it wasn't a South Carolina. It wasn't a UConn. You know, it was a new team. So now we've got somebody else to worry about, somebody else that is in the national championship conversation. And for someone who loves women's basketball and wants it to grow, this grows our game. The fact that UCLA won their first national championship. So I love it. I'm happy. And I'm going to celebrate later like I was for the Bruins all season. I wasn't. I'm going to tell the truth. Y'all know Texas was my team. But I'm literally more than happy that Coach Close, Corey Close, got this and the way in which they did it.
Parity is a good thing.
Yes.
Overall, we want parity in sports. We want games to be engaging. And while there this game wasn't necessarily back and forth nail biter that maybe we would want a national championship to be. I think the outcome is a good thing for our sport. And look, I'll say we've gotten the chance to talk to Kiki Rice and to Corey Close, their head coach, just in the past couple of months here on Hoops 360. And I think in this job, I don't know if you can relate the same way, when you talk to coaches and you get to know players and you get to know their SIDs and everyone that works behind the scenes, you fall in love with them and you root for them and you root for their stories because you get to know these people on a real human level. But it's so much more beyond that. You know, getting to talk to Corey Close and seeing her process and talking off air just about life in general, it made me root for her so much. And so I'm so happy for this team just beyond that, beyond the relationship that we've gotten at least to grow, you know, through a microphone or through a screen. I'm so happy for this group of seniors. You mentioned it. Lauren Betts and Gabby Hawkes and Kiki Rice and Angela Dugalich, this entire core. We said so many times throughout the season, throughout the tournament, when they got to the Final Four, if not now, then when? You know, you've got Lauren Betts, who's maybe the biggest cheat code in all of women's college basketball and has been over the past couple of years. You have these seniors that have been together for so long. You have these seniors that are all going off to the next thing that they want to do, whether it's WNBA or otherwise, that this is your window, that Corey Close is now going to have to hit the transfer portal heavy next season, that this right here was their chance to win the first national championship for UCLA women's basketball. And so now that question of if not now, when, it doesn't haunt them.
Yeah.
You know, they did it. They were able to capitalize on the chemistry that they've built, the relationships that they've built. Corey Close now has one. And so whatever Corey Close's future is at UCLA or in women's college basketball, women's basketball in general, I don't know what it is. We've heard speculation of what her future might be. She can walk away whenever that is. She can walk away saying that she's been a national champion. Yeah. So I'm just so happy. I'm happy for this fan base. I'm happy for these players. I'm just happy for this team. And of course, my heart hurts for Dawn Staley and the South Carolina squad that's now gotten blown out in two consecutive national championships. And there's two ways of looking at that, of either, well, you got blown out, but you're also in the national championship games. There's kind of two different ways to look at it. My heart hurts for that team that's been so fun to watch all season long. But for this UCLA squad, I'm so happy for them, genuinely, as somebody who covers the sport and just as a person.
Yes. No, you have to be. I mean, and then you mentioned those seniors, like all seniors scored 173 of the last points for UCLA. That isn't crazy. Like, that's just maturity. That's veteran leadership. Like you said, you've been here before. And I feel like Cass Negley and I always say this about teams that win WNBA championships, that you need to experience a little bit of heartbreak in order to get over the hump. And so I love that they were here last year and that they lost and they had that taste in their mouth, just enough to know what they needed to do to get to the national championship and then to make sure that they won it. I give a shout out to Kiki Rice. I have really enjoyed, like, watching her career and her flourish both on and off the court. Talk about a young woman that cares about serving underrepresented communities and giving back and has been a Jordan athlete and has had all the notoriety. And obviously in the big city in LA, like, you know, just kind of that superstardom. And I just felt like Kiki, through her entire career, was always humble, always hungry. And this championship, I believe, will allow us to remember her as a champion and one of the best guards of our game. I'm not sure if before this we were giving her that level of a respect or talking about her legacy like we would a Flauje Johnson. But I now believe that, you know, with this, her legacy just shines. And you become a winner. Anytime you become a winner, right? Like, we believe the proof is in the pudding. You mentioned Gabriela Hawkes. What a game. Like, 21 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. Girl, she exploded. And, you know, Caroline, she's been like the ultimate glue player for this team. But to see the glue player shine in a national championship game is also a storyline that I'm always here for. I thought that was really cool.
Her last game.
Like, come on, she packed her punch. So I was really happy for her. I felt like she got so emotional. I felt like when she subbed out of the game, it was about 3 minutes left, and she didn't actually want to, like, acknowledge that, like, it was the last time she was subbing out, you know? So she didn't hug everyone as she went through. She didn't have that emotional moment with coach. She just slapped everybody's hands like it was normal. And I was like, oh, she's trying to keep it together, you know, because she knows, like, and so I appreciated like seeing that part of her journey as well. But you mentioned South Carolina, you know, what level of frustration, you know, and sadness they must be feeling. I'm seeing the clips on social of them at the podium and still a team that is smiling and that, you know, looks like bright lights and just understands that they didn't have it today is what Dawn Staley said. And she was correct. It seemed like from the start, you know, they were gassed. I truly believe that the situation that happened with Geno after they beat UConn in the semifinal just took a lot of emotion out of them. And a lot of, I think, just took a lot of emotion. And so their on-court performance, it looked like they had already played a national championship, you know? And listen, let me be honest. When you slay Goliath, I mean, I've never seen a Geno Auriemma team look as disrupted, look as chaotic.
Or frazzled.
Frazzled is the perfect word. I've never seen one of his teams look like that. And then losing double digits. Like, we just don't see that from their teams. And so I think that they hit the moment and that just felt like their national championship. And then they didn't have enough in order to compete with UCLA, who definitely battled versus Texas, but also was in control of that game. And so it's tough, but this is the reason why coaches are, you know, go down in history as some of the best, because how will Dawn Staley respond and bounce back? You know, I think the career of Raven Johnson, we're going to miss. I think she's one of our, you know, like college basketball princesses. You know, she's lovely. But yeah, what a tough way to go out. But yeah, it's like you said off air, you beat UConn and an undefeated team in a historic season and don't have a trophy to show for it, you know? Yeah. And it felt like that. It felt like if they beat UConn, you could beat anybody. And that's just the beauty in the game of basketball, honestly, is that you can't.
Yeah.
You got to play each game.
It feels a little unsatisfying that you got this far. And look, getting to a national championship game is an accomplishment in and of itself.
Of course.
But this is a South Carolina program that just getting to the national championship isn't good enough. And that is a standard that's been set by Dawn Staley. So, look, getting to the national championship is great and all, but beating UConn, handing UConn its first loss in 14 months, and doing it the way they did. They dominated UConn. Dominated them in every single statistical category. So you do that to a team like UConn, a team that did that to you in the national championship game the year before. And then, of course, all of the post-game antics and words that were exchanged between Geno Auriemma and Dawn Staley, which unfortunately dominated the headlines far more than South Carolina's performance did. And I hate that for South Carolina. I do.
Yeah.
But for South Carolina to beat UConn the way that they did, I thought, who's beating this team?
Yeah.
Who is beating a team that just got more momentum than you could ever possibly get? I mean, slaying the dragon, that is UConn. Like, how much more juju, how much more juice do you need than that? But it did kind of feel like there was a hangover.
Mm-hmm.
But South Carolina was still hung up on beating UConn, was still hung up on the emotion of that game. And after that game, it felt like South Carolina's tank was empty. And they just didn't have anything left to give. In the South Carolina UConn game, that had a national championship feel to it.
Yes.
Like, that felt like it was a meeting of, you know, the heavyweights, the two best coaches in women's college basketball, two of the best teams in the country with so much history, with so much talent, teams that have been there before that were comfortable in a national championship setting. I don't want to take anything away from UCLA because UCLA deserves all of their flowers. They are the national champions. To the victors go the spoils. But that game had a national championship feel to it.
Yeah.
That they just felt like they were hungover, it proverbially, from that game. And they just didn't have anything left to give.
No. You know, and I'll say too, like, I agree with the emotion. I also believe from a basketball standpoint, they just were a bad matchup. You know, like, basketball is still about matchups. And UCLA was just not a good matchup for South Carolina in terms of size, in terms of discipline, in terms of maturity. But to be honest, then if I say that, I come back to just the brilliance that is UCLA women's basketball this season. Like, and I'm just honestly grateful that I got to see it up close in person and know, like, no. This brand is a little different than the rest of these brands, you know? Yeah. I also believe, though, too, like, what we saw this year in terms of all four number one seeds getting to the final four and kind of the separation that exists right now between maybe the top four and then 5 through 11. I believe that that is going to be different next year. I believe with the teams that are number one and those that they are graduating, and things are going to have to look differently. And I believe that we're going to see maybe the top 6 or 7 teams be able to compete at that caliber. But it was good. I love when the cream rises to the top, you know, and it really did in this tournament. And UCLA, they are it. They are it. Like, that style of basketball was awesome. I feel like, you know, I'm not sure who some of the best college basketball teams have been in terms of rosters, other than like the Breanna Stewart era in which they won 4 in a row. But I feel like you could put this UCLA team up against some of those, and it would be like fun conversations in terms of, you know, who were better, because they are loaded. They were loaded. Yeah.
So, okay. I want to stick on that for a second, because I'll go back to some of the conversations we had on air and off air.
Yeah.
Going into the tournament. And we all agreed the first one seed that we thought would go down in the tournament was UCLA. The one seed that we trusted the least was UCLA. The team, or the side of the bracket that we thought would be the easiest to get through for a 2 or a 3 seed was UCLA's side of the bracket.
Yeah.
What changed?
You know, it's such a great question. I feel like my reasoning, I think going up into that, was the lack of experience that they had winning a national championship versus some of the other teams, you know? So like a Kim Mulkey was on their side, right? If that was a matchup, maybe experience is the difference in that one. But to be honest, I should have known after watching the Big Ten tournament and the way that they destroyed the 2-seed Iowa. I should have known after that. That was like somebody hit me on the forehead. I should have known after that that this is a different level than what we think. And it's so interesting because Duke was close. You know, like we look at some of those games, like Duke was close, but there still just was another level of basketball, right? That like UCLA was just better, and not better that day. Like, I actually believe if they played a series, they would have beat them. You know, again, like I think they're just at a different level, but they were playing their best basketball and building up to it all season. And it's so interesting because I think my other worry was that they hadn't lost since Thanksgiving. And so it just felt like if somebody in a game punched them first, would they be able to respond? We never found out. You know what I'm saying? We never found out. Like, I think in their response to the Duke game, maybe we did find out, which probably then turned the tide. And it was like, oh, okay, well, now you know they're ready to rock. They're ready to take a hit, get back up, keep fighting, and then finish the basketball game. But seniors, you know, you can't factor in experience. That is just kind of that variable that you just don't know how it's going to show up, but you know it is. And so I love that they were the most experienced, oldest team. Like, it actually felt like I was watching like a WNBA championship where it's just like, ah, they just older than everybody else. You know what I'm saying? They're just playing better basketball. They got better IQ. They're more physical. They're just older than everybody else.
Experience, I think, has to be the most important metric that you just can't really measure. You can't really show it in a box score. You can't really put your finger on exactly what it is, other than it's something that I think is necessary. It's a key ingredient in the recipe of building a national championship contender. And you talk about, you know, how parity is going to grow even more. I heard this so many times. There's only 4 good teams in women's college basketball. I remember a time there was only 2.
Ooh.
Like, I remember a time when it was UConn and Tennessee and nobody else.
Close.
Well, now we had a upper echelon, an elite tier of 4 teams. And it's only going to grow more and more the more that teams and athletic departments invest into their women's college basketball program.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned how the parity is only going to grow more and more over the next couple of years. Silas Swords and Olivia Olson now have 2 years under their belts of carrying Michigan's team. Jazzy Davidson now has a full season of being the focal point at USC. And guess what they get back next season? Ooh. Juju Watkins gets back at USC.
Doing my happy dance. For those who can't see, I'm doing my happy dance. Let's go.
I'm already terrified of USC next season. I don't want to flush this season already. I don't want to move ahead to next season already, but it's hard not to get excited about what we are going to get next season. Of course, Olivia Miles is on to the next thing. Flajee Johnson is on to the next thing. Lauren Betts and so many parts of that UCLA squad. Yes, they're moving on to the next level, but we do have so much young talent that is returning, but young talent that has that key ingredient, that secret sauce, that special thing that comes from knocking on the door. I think you have to knock on the door of winning a championship before you can finally break through.
Oh,
everything
gosh.
That any coach or player tells me is, oh, we're the experienced team. We've been here before, so that's our edge, and that's clearly coming to fruition.
Yes, I love this. Oh my gosh, I'm going to continue the list that you started. Jazzy Davidson is a great one because they have the number one overall high school recruit coming. And then also Juju getting back, hopefully. Again. Also Juju getting back. And it's a team that still made the NCAA tournament. Like Lindsey Gottlieb showed us that she can coach even with maybe a staff that or a roster, excuse me, that's shorthanded. How about Hannah Hidalgo? I mean, to see Hannah and Niel come back next year, can they find a premier big inside that wants to play with Hannah? Because I think it would be all she wrote. If they got someone that is 6'3", 6'4", a presence inside, back to the basket, pick and roll, I think that mixed with Hannah's defense and then some shooters around, I think it'd be all she wrote. I love that Hannah said, her and Gino Auriemma's exchange after their game was, I want another shot at you guys next year. I can't wait because I'm like, she already knows. She's tasted it. It's been there. I think also, too, going with my Jersey girls, Michaela Blake's, Vanderbilt was an amazing story this season. Shea Ralph showed us that she can coach at a national championship level, I believe, even though they didn't experience the success that they wanted. It was there and they needed a couple different pieces. I'm excited to see Michaela Blake's come back next year after experiencing
Aubrey
some
Galvin.
Games. Oh my gosh, Aubrey Galvin, freshman. 100%. Yep. If they can stay together, if they have the belief, I think that's a unit that will follow. It'd be interesting to see Texas next year. No Rory Harmon, which is just honestly going to break my heart. It already is, to be quite honest. I'm not ready to see Texas without Rory Harmon on the floor. But Madison Booker, if there is a player that experienced the most heartbreak in this tournament and that will be the most fueled to come back next year and to right the ship, it is Madison Booker. We should be on watch. I think she is going to come back like a bleep from hell and win and be right back at the Final Four ready to go. It was so sad to see her performance in the Final Four, knowing that she's capable of so much more. But again, beauty in the game of basketball and that she has another year. And hopefully with her and Vic Schaefer and company, I think they'll be right back to a national championship contender. But those are some players that I'm like, we saw, moments of brilliance and fight and a Notre Dame team that shouldn't even have been anywhere near the Elite Eight, almost knock out UConn. And it's just like, wait till we get these people back next year. Because like you said, they've knocked on the door and they've experienced a little bit of heartbreak and they want to learn from it. And these are some of the players that in the next few years will be the faces that we see in the WNBA. And I think their story really starts right now with how they can respond to getting close to knocking on the door and how they respond next year. So many good things to look forward to. But what a year for women's college basketball. I feel like we had so many good storylines, good things that happened. And I think UCLA was actually really the cherry on top. I think that is just, I honestly want someone to do a whole book or continue their documentary now after and kind of do a part two, because I do think it was just the storybook ending that was really nice. And we have a new champion and a new team to worry about winning championships women's basketball. And that's what we want.
It's a new team. Although we've focused on UCLA for a long time. They were in the Final Four last year. We've been talking about UCLA for the last couple of years. winning a national championship is different.
Yep.
I think we'd be naive to say that legacies don't change because you win a national championship. It's also how they change in the public perception. Like when teams win a national championship, you know, look, South Carolina's won plenty. UConn's won plenty. But when you win your first one, all of a sudden you're viewed differently by fans, by media members, by players in the transfer portal. You don't think Audie Crooks is looking around at what UCLA is doing, understanding that they're going to have a lot of talent to replace? And of course, Audie Crooks, star at Iowa State, just entered the transfer portal. So like that changes another
one.
Things.
Yeah, that's another one.
Especially – another one that's going to be – that's returning and also going to be wearing different colors next year, which I'm ready for. She needs some help. But I think it's also – the other thing with UCLA is not just the fact that they won one, but the manner in which they did.
Yeah.
They beat South Carolina, which is – if you're the most casual of casuals of women's basketball fans, you know South Carolina. Well, they just blew them out in the national championship game. They just beat Texas and beat Texas at their own game in a low-scoring defensive slugfest. I mean, UCLA blew out Iowa. Like you mentioned in the Big Ten championship game, Iowa was a Sweet 16 team this year. So it wasn't just UCLA winning a national championship. It wasn't a fluky national championship. It wasn't a, oh, you got a lucky call, you got a lucky shot off in the national championship kind of win. It was a, you beat so many great teams and destroyed so many great teams on the path to a national championship that has just cemented UCLA in a different tier of women's basketball programs, I think.
Totally, totally. Once you win and you're the last one standing, the one that finishes your season on a win, we look at you totally different. You're in a different level. And now, like, I think the best thing happens after that because we get greedy as fans. Expectations.
Oh, it's, yeah, when you're on the next ones.
Yeah. Hey, expectations. You know, I'm already like, all right, let's see how Corey Close rees up. Like, I want them to celebrate. And I'm going to celebrate with them because I think, again, it's a great story for women's basketball. But now there's like the pressure is a privilege conversation, you know, and how can you re-up and how can you be back? And so I love it, honestly. And they've got some young players on that bench, too, that didn't shine because they had six seniors, but that also can come back next year and be part of that core nucleus who experienced it. I think about like a Flaje Johnson who experienced that much success her freshman year, you know, and it felt like that was kind of the thing that maybe she like leaned on throughout her career was the fact that she had been there before, but just could not get back there, you know? And so it'd be interesting to see what's up next for everyone, but definitely for the Bruins.
In terms of what's next, and as it relates to the Bruins, for Lauren Betts, the WNBA draft is next for her. And of course, there's so many of these other players as well, but Lauren Betts will more than likely be the highest taken player from this UCLA squad. This is the first year in the last, 3 to 4 years where the number one overall pick is not set in stone as of March. Last year, we knew Paige was going to be the number one overall pick. We knew Paige was going to be the number one overall pick the year before that. Mm-hmm. We knew Caitlin was going to be the number one overall pick. Like, we knew that Aaliyah Boston was going to be the number one overall pick.
I'm crying. We don't know who it's going to be this year. We knew Paige was going to be the number one pick 2 years before.
We did. Like, we knew Paige, like, when Paige got to UConn, we knew, okay, that's whenever she's out, like, she's the number one overall pick. Like, it's done. Crazy. It's done.
Yep.
It's open. It feels wide open, at least from where things stand right now. Do you view Lauren Betts as a WNBA prospect differently today on Sunday, April 5th, than maybe you did going into the tournament?
Yeah, to me, when I saw her at the Big Ten Tournament Championship, I viewed her as WNBA prospect. You know, you obviously can't teach 6'7", so you need that. She's got long arms, a great frame. She can run down the floor. She can laterally move. Like, I think she's got some of these things that normally with those her height, you struggle to get and you're learning at the next level. She obviously has a high IQ, and UCLA plays a professional style of basketball, you know, and their high IQ and their reads and their scoring and their discipline. So you're looking at her, I think if you're a GM and a head coach and you're saying, well, we know that she can play high level basketball. We know that her size is obviously a factor. I would think that you could insert her, you know, right away and get her time and minutes, but also like be able to use her because of her size. I think the physicality at the next level is what everyone has to adjust to in the WNBA because it is such a you know, a physical brand of basketball. But to me, the fact that she can knock down a mid-range shot and she's comfortable shooting elbow jump shots, like, I think she's ready. I think that she upped her draft stock throughout this tournament because of her consistency and knowing that her team had to play through her in order to win, and they could do so. And she did what she needed to do in order for them to win. And so, yeah. And obviously she's playing against some of the best in the country. You know, you beat, you beat South Carolina, Texas, you know, and you look as dominant as you did. And so I think that her draft stock, you know, has gone up. It'd be interesting to see what the Dallas Wings do. I think the other prospect is an easy FUD that could go number one. And, you know, obviously for her shooting percentages and her efficiency, Caroline, and again, the high IQ, you know, she's coming from a trusted brand of basketball of those that have been successful in the WNBA, right? Is like, it feels like it's half UConn, but, you know, it's like, what do you need? What do you feel like is more of a need? And sometimes it's like the potential of players, you know, the WNBA is a post player league. If you don't know that, you ain't been watching. It is run by post players. Nafisa Collier, Asia Wilson, like I could go on and on. It is a post player league. And so do you want to get a post player that you could do you want to get a post player that you can build to be a premier post player? Or do you want to get a sharpshooter that can immediately help you spread the floor for other pieces? It'd be interesting to see what they choose, but I think either one is the right choice. But I just think Lauren Betts, like, kind of made herself a factor now. You know, I'm with you. I don't believe it's as easy as one or the other. I don't.
Right.
I think it's based on what you need. And in past years, like you said, it's been Paige because Paige. It's been Kaitlyn because Kaitlyn. It's been Leah because of Leah. I don't care what I need. I need them. You know, they're that big of a deal. But I'm not sure we have a clear one here.
It's not clear because they're such different players.
Mm.
And I think Dallas has a need in both of the needs that both AZ and Lauren can fill.
Yeah, they need a lot.
I mean, Dallas needs size. Dallas needs everything as I look at my list of their needs. Everything.
Just other than
but
the
they
two
need size
and
they need shooters.
They're good.
Yeah,
yes.
Right, exactly. So, like, AZ fills a shooting need. Lauren fills a size need. So it really just comes down to what is a bigger need? Who do you think can impact you right away? I think Lauren, we'd be kidding ourselves to say that what you do in March doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That what you do on the biggest stages against the best teams in the country doesn't matter. I think that bears far more weight than anything else. So, of course, we might look at Lauren Betts as a prospect a little bit differently after winning the national championship and taking down Texas and South Carolina in the process.
Right.
But what about AZ? Because we saw AZ kind of disappear at moments, even in games that UConn won throughout the course of the tournament. We saw AZ, she didn't shoot as consistently well as we are accustomed to. That doesn't eliminate the entirety of the career that AZ Fudd has had. Like, a couple of bad shooting nights in the tournament in your fifth year doesn't eliminate everything you've done. But it you can't ignore it.
Yes.
So does her draft stock maybe take a hit?
Yeah. You know, I honestly think it's a valid question because what we talk about all year with UConn is that they're really, really good, but for 18 games out of the year, they don't play anybody, right? And so you can't ignore her performances in the tournament because you're having to play back-to-back elite teams that know that you are the focus. See, at the next level, AZ may not be the focus on the scouting report, right? She may be the shooter that you say you can't leave, but I don't know if people are going to be game planning to stop her, right? Paige Bueckers, that we just keep making that comparison. That is what people are doing. You know, they're well aware that you want a game plan to stop Paige. And so I think what AZ showed us is that maybe in terms of her role, possibly at the next level, it's not necessarily a superstar that is bringing everybody else along. I think she could be a terrific role player, a like terrific scorer, you know, someone that literally spreads the floor. And that when she has to focus on knocking down shots and guarding her person, she can be the best version. You said this to me, and it's been true all year, but she was not the best player on her team, you know? And so it was also tough that in those moments, I wanted her to peak. Like, I was like, come on, this is when you could change the narrative and say, no, I can get into this. You know, like, yes, I'm just a shooter. Or it's not saying just a shooter. Sorry, I don't want to say that anyway, belittling. Like, you know, she's a shooter, but like, now I can become a scorer. Now I can become somebody right. who has the potential to take over a game. And that just did not exist. And so, yeah, I don't know if it takes a hit. I just think maybe it lets us know that at the next level, she could be more of an elite role player than a superstar. You know, and hey, both can win championships. Yeah, both can win championships. There have been some elite role players who have been key in teams winning championships. But that was kind of my thought. I think that if it had went the other way and she could have bust out of her funk and won a national championship and shot her way out of it, then I'd have been like, yeah, this is a problem. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But because that didn't happen, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's at least fair to question about a certain level of evolution that maybe we wanted to see from AZ's game, but didn't necessarily see come to fruition against the best teams in the country and the biggest stages in the country. Like, doing that matters. But do you want to bring it back to the national championship game? UCLA wins it 79-51. Just some staggering numbers here. South Carolina shot 18 of 62. That's insane. 18 of 62, 29% from the field. UCLA dominated them in the paint. UCLA dominated South Carolina at the boards, which is South Carolina's bread and butter, scoring in the paint and dominating at the boards. Do you want to hear from some of these head coaches? First, we'll hear from the winning head coach, Corey Close, winning her very first national championship. Here's what the Bruins head coach had to say postgame.
I remember my dad used to say, if you can, I mean, he knew I loved to compete. He goes, if you can take something that you love and continue to compete and impact people's hearts in the process, you found a good thing. And this has been a calling, not a job. And I just am like, so it's just, I've been saying it all day, but I don't even know how else to say it. It's immeasurably more than I could ask or imagine. And so I just am really grateful, but it's not about me. It's about watching these incredible young women be dream chasers, to watch them grow in ways that they will remember and it will stick with them for the rest of their lives. And it's about their work and their habits yielding. And we say this, we want to recruit courageous. Kiss me, choked up. Because there's a lot of times where we wondered if it could be true. I said I wanted to find uncommon, courageous women that were willing to make uncommon choices that maybe possibly could yield an uncommon result. And today it did.
Let's hear from Dawn Staley. Unfortunately, she has been in this position before, just last year. UConn worked South Carolina in the national championship game. This was Dawn Staley's reaction to her team's loss in the national championship.
I thought they just came out and disrupted from a defensive standpoint, and then they pretty much got what they wanted offensively, and then when they did it, they created second chance opportunities, and we just didn't have it today. We tried, but we just didn't have it today, and they were the better team today. So really congratulations to them. I'm glad, you know, sometimes you're a part of, you know, women's basketball history, and it's not, you know, favorable to you, but you can see if you're going to lose to a team like UCLA, you want to lose to a team that just really outworked you, out-executed you, made it very difficult for you to perform at a high level. And it was a direct reflection of what they did to us.
Isa, do you want to keep it on Dawn Staley for just a moment?
Yeah.
I want UCLA to enjoy being national champions and everything that comes from that, collecting the confetti, going on all of the television shows, wearing a national championship t-shirt, being a national champion for the first time ever. But I'm going to take it back to the Final Four, because this is probably the biggest story that came out of the entire tournament. And it was Dawn Staley and Gino Auriemma and their altercation after the game that overshadowed everything that happened on the court, all of the amazing things that South Carolina did on the court that night. Unfortunately, we heard from Gino at halftime, and Gino already was ripping the refs. Gino said, you know, where is the foul call when one of my players has a ripped jersey? And then we see the cut to Sarah Strong ripping her own jersey. And then we see after the game, you know, and Gino's back was facing the camera, but we just see Don Staley kind of pointing at him, yelling at him. Clearly, there is some friction there. And Dawn Staley does her post-game interview on the court, and she said Gino accused her of not shaking his hand pre-game. Gino Auriemma doubled down on all of those things in his post-game press conference. Said, Dawn Staley and I don't have anything in common. I don't apologize. Don't take back what I said. Gino Auriemma was a crybaby loser. Like, he behaved in such an immature and disappointing way, Ice. Your reaction to what we saw that night in Phoenix?
Yeah, it just was, you know, disappointing. At this level of basketball, when we've only got, you know, 2-3 games left in the season, you want to focus on the basketball. You want that to be the story. You know, you hope that you get good games. You hope you get good storylines. And we hope we can talk about those. And so, unfortunately, this was just not a good storyline that came from that. You know, totally believe, you know, hindsight 2020, but, you know, that it was a distraction, right? Like, whatever happened, I think the only word that I can use, like, to describe what happened was a distraction. You know, whether or not they shook hands in the beginning, whether or not the timing was off, whatever, whatever. At the end of a game in which you have lost in a national semifinal and the other team is going to the championship, I'm not really sure what else needs to be said to the coach other than congratulations. Good job. See you next time. You know, like, I just, it wasn't the time nor place. If the handshake is really what the conversation was about, it's just not the time or place to bring that up. And so, yeah, I'm with you. It just, you know, it gave sore loser. And my comments about it, and I made some, you know, I'm at the Men's Final Four Covenant for CBS and been on We Need to Talk. And I just kind of said there were some moments that were missed. I wish, you know, Coach Auriemma would have been able to sub AZ foot out the game. Like, I just wish we would have been able to give her a standing ovation, you know, and people would have been able to acknowledge her. Like, she's a player that has meant a lot to college basketball. And it felt like Coach Auriemma was maybe so concerned with getting to the handshake line that he didn't give, you know, her that option, that opportunity. And I don't think it's because they were losing. I don't. I just think that, again, he just was kind of sidetracked. And so that's something that I thought about. And also just say that, you know, the issued apology and statement that he gave, I think actually made things worse because of the indirectness in saying, like, he apologized to Dawn Staley. You know, I just think it made it tough. And I think since then, there's been some statements that he's called Dawn directly. Okay, you know, she's obviously was competing for a national championship. So there are other things that, you know, maybe are more important to her. But I think the big thing was just you hated that it was such a masterful game. Like, such a dynamic game plan by Dawn Staley defensively. Something that I don't know how many people really saw coming other than the Gamecock faithful that bleed for Dawn Staley and that team. And so the way in which they beat UConn would have been amazing to talk about. But unfortunately, none of us talked about that. Because when you get two coaches at that caliber and one that has been to 25 Final Fours, acting in that way, you can't help but talk about that.
Yeah.
And so I understand that there are some critiques about why continue the conversation, just talk about the basketball, but you have to acknowledge it. Because also, we have to hold people accountable. That's the next step in this. We have to hold people accountable. I think Andrea Carter said it, you know, that Coach Auriemma was upset that Dawn didn't follow protocol in the beginning of the game with shaking hands or was late to it or whatever. Well, he also didn't follow protocol and leaving after the game and not shaking hands with the other team. And to me, that actually hurt the most because it just was like, come on, there are some young ladies who have maybe for the only time ever won a game and gotten to the national championship, you know, and for that to just be the narrative that you're not there and to take away from that attention and that light was just tough. And it was honestly sad to see. I have covered Coach Auriemma. I do Big East Media Day every year. You know, we're on hugging terms now. Like, you know, I like him. And it was just sad to see that happened. And I understand emotions are high and, you know, clearly both parties are really upset. But I just wish that a coach at the caliber of Gino Auriemma in 25 Final Fours just could have been better in the moment. Yeah, I'll say something funny about the moment, though. Raven Johnson giving Dawn Staley a high five after she was going off was literally like the funniest thing ever. The funniest thing ever. I said, I love Raven so much. How do you not love this kid so much? Like, the middle of chaos, coach is going off, kind of being held back. And Raven just comes over. She's nodding her head. And then just coach a high five. Like, I just was like, this kid is such a light. Oh, my goodness. This woman. She's not a kid. This woman is such a light. I know. We're going to miss it. We are going to miss it.
I'm
going to
miss it. It is such a, like aunt and niece relationship, or like big sister, little sister relationship. Like, I love the relationship between Raven Johnson and Dawn Staley. But I mean, all very well said by you. You know, I have to question if UConn won that game. Would the handshake have been that big of a deal?
Yeah.
Maybe it would have. Maybe it would have. But I kind of don't think it would have been. And I remember last year, after the national championship game, when we got cut-ins to the locker room of Dawn Staley, just irate beyond belief. After that game, Gino stood there with his arms open, waiting for a hug from Dawn Staley, and she went over and hugged him. And I'm sure her blood was boiling in the moment. I'm sure any nice thing she said about UConn in that moment tastes like vinegar coming out of her mouth. I get it, because as a competitor, you're pissed off when you don't win. You want to win.
We all know though. That's the beauty of being a competitor, Caroline, is you gotta maintain that emotion. We all are like
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. I'd be wanting to fight when I lose Scrabble. But I obviously can't throw a punch. I just need to be better with getting my words together. Like, come on, be better. Be better. And acknowledge that somebody else was. Come on.
Like, and especially somebody that he has a lot of history with, not just coaching against, but coaching with. And I don't think that Gino should be all sunshine and roses and super happy and hunky-dory about losing a game. Like, I don't blame him for being pissed off. I don't blame him for being angry in that moment. I don't blame him at all. But it's your job to have some decorum. It is your job to get over all of the bad and negative emotions that you're feeling and just put a smile on for the camera, shake your opponent's hand and say, you know what? You got me this time. Do what you need to do. Say what you need to say, even if it is coach speak after coach speak after coach speak. Because if Gino shook Dawn's hand and got up on the podium and said, credit to South Carolina, they're a great team, we wouldn't have been talking about Gino Auriemma and UConn. We would have been talking about the game. We would have been talking about South Carolina. Again, this is our job, to be talking about what the biggest stories are. So we need to be talking about this. But I just thought that of Gino Auriemma, somebody who's been coaching in this sport for 40 plus years, somebody who's won 12 national championships, somebody who's been to 13, somebody who's been to 20 something Final Fours in his career.
25.
Somebody that has such what felt like a titanium ironclad legacy. It was dinged a little bit. And it was because of his actions. And I hate that. I hate that for him. I hate that for his players. I hate that for the UConn, you know, brand that is the strongest in women's college basketball. I hate that it's the story. But Gino made a bad decision to act the way that he did.
And I'm going to pose these questions for you. You don't have to answer them. Would he have done that to Vic Schaefer? Would he have done that to Kim Mulkey?
Yes. Yeah.
You're funny.
Yes. 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 Vic, Kim. Probably.
Oh, you're funny. Literally almost fell out of my chair. Oh, man. But you get the picture. You get Kim Mulkey was a bad idea. That was a bad one by me. I'm so sorry. It was not. That's a target name on our pod. I'm so sorry. Yes, that would happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, but you get the picture. You get the picture.
Yes. It's a bad look. Mm-hmm. It's a really bad look. And to answer your question, like, maybe not. But Gino's actions have opened the door for us to wonder and to ask those questions.
Yes.
So even if the truth is like, no, he would have done that to anybody. Like maybe there's a world where that's true. But he opened the door for us to speculate. And that's on him.
Yeah, totally. Totally, friend.
Ice, any final thoughts? on the season, on the game?
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like just, you know, congratulations to UCLA again. Honestly, yeah. Again, a beautiful story to watch and thankful that I got to see parts of it up close. I say this very selfishly. I'm going to admit this. But the group of athletes that we talked about that experience heartbreak this year and that get to come back and play college basketball next year, I am so excited to see what it looks like. I think, and I guess this is actually me saying that women's basketball, even though I love it and I'm partial to it and it's my thing, like the game continues to pull me in more because we get more stories. We get more stars. You know, we get more moments that we really get to celebrate. And so I think the UCLA story for me was like, yes, this is actually exactly what our game needed. And yeah, now we've got just some amazing athletes and some really good high school hoopers that are coming next year, and we get to do this thing all over again. But it's been so good. And it's been so fun covering it with you and Cass. Like, we have a great time. We have such a great time. I'm telling you, I'm not saying this because I'm on the pod, but a lot of people don't get to work with friends. I do. I'm so grateful. Such a good time.
It's the best job in the world. And to have you along for the ride is truly the opportunity and a gift of a lifetime. It's such a blessing, I think, to watch this sport grow year over year.
Yeah.
And to start to see casual sports fans in general organically and naturally get drawn to the stories and the athletes in this sport. Mm-hmm. It was not that long ago when casual sports fans wouldn't even know what was going on in women's college basketball. One, because there wasn't any coverage of it. And two, because there was just such a lack of interest. Not anymore. Like,
not anymore.
Gino and Dawn's spat was the number one story in sports on Saturday morning. Like, we are talking about these players being household names, these coaches being household names, these programs becoming known more and more. There's more of those programs year over year. So I know that we have one season in the books. We have an awesome season next year, and we are not going anywhere on Hoops 360. We are still coming at you every single week. We'll have a reaction to the WNBA draft. We'll get you updated on everything that we missed in the WNBA, all things CBA, since all of our March focus was on the college game. So we're not going anywhere, but it was an absolute blast of a season and such a pleasure doing it with you, Ice, and doing it with all of you. So appreciate everyone for listening. If you're new to the pod, welcome. If you're here every week, appreciate you. You can find us every single week on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. And wherever you get your podcasts, you can find Ice Young doing her thing on CBS Sports. She absolutely crushes it, as always. We will see y'all next week.